Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The Streets of San Francisco, starring Carl Malden.
I'm doing the visual impression of Carl Malden then. You got a massive nose, you look like a buffalo tomato.
And Michael Douglas.
He had a very sharp beaky nose and is a sex addict for a long time. Anyway, I'm Sean Keaveney, this is the Creative Cul-de-Sac, the latest edition. I say the latest edition, it of course depends on what order, what sequence you're listening in. Just FYI, I've said in many other instances, we're stacking these up in 2021, so they're recorded at all sort of different times of the year. I rarely mention exactly when because I don't want to date it, you know. But this is nearish to Christmas.
Simply having a wonderful Christmas time, great.
Hello.
Keep it down. I'm trying to record a fucking podcast here, Rex.
Jesus. I bet Joe Rogan don't get this in his 75-room mansion, does he? Anyway, we won't go on about Christmas because that would date it. And I don't know about you, but I love Christmas so much that I find things that remind me of Christmas immediately after Christmas sad. For instance, you know, like sell-by dates and things like that. If I go back to a pot of double cream in the fridge that I've forgot to toss out, and it says best before the 24th of December, and it's like the 30th, it makes me feel dreadfully sad. Anyway, let's not let that detain us here. Here I am again, surrounded by my detritus in our top room, with no notion whatsoever if this podcast, into which I've put so many hours, is going to even light up the world of one person. So it's a colossal leap of faith. Who knows, it might be a repository of comfort for loved ones after I'm dead. Hopefully in about 50 years, but we'll see about that. What I've got today for you, I've unearthed some lyrics, inexplicably. That's always fun, isn't it? Unless you're Bob Dylan or Paul Simon or Gil Scott-Heron, nearly everybody else is shite at writing lyrics, and I'm no different. So that'll be fun. Something out of the book of Genesis, if you've heard me mention that before when I started my afternoon show on Six Music. No, come on, keep it together. It's important. I started a book of Genesis, writing in all the ideas that the listeners and myself and my producer and everybody else might come up with to start the show with. There's a couple of interesting bits in there. A bit of stand-up, like really, really early stand-up from when I first started. Remember, the career only lasted 7 years before you finishing my sentences for me. That's how well we know each other. Before I quit due to public demand. Another little bit of filth, Sean Keaveney explains sexual innuendo in blues music, and that's about it. Been a bit up and down like a bride's nightie in the last couple of weeks as far as my mood is concerned. Feeling the pain of not being on air on a daily basis and having a constituency to drone at. So I'm really hoping that by the time this hits ears, that I'll be much more buoyant and reconnected with you, my audience. So let's have a little look at these. Right. I've got a couple of interesting pieces of A4 here. No idea when from. I've got a feeling that I did these not all that long ago, maybe 5 or 6 years ago. Like, me and Joe Haddo used to work on the radio show, and another guy, we had this idea of me writing an album of topical songs, because we had the Christmas song, we got the cheddar cheese song, not particularly topical, except play it when you feel like cheese. And our idea was that we'd write a song for every part of the year. Halloween, spring. You see, I'm running out of ideas already. I've got a feeling that I wrote these lyrics around that time when I was trying to coalesce some kind of idea about, like, weaponizing my novelty song talent, which, it has to be said, is quite powerful. Just wait till you hear Dry Gin for Jen, the Dry Gin song. It's just something special. But I've written, I think this song is a song, lyric, entitled Delivery Window. Okay, so here we go. I don't know what the tune is, don't remember it. Maybe we never even wrote one. Your package is on its way. Track it, press this button. I booked a half day off work for this. Next door neighbour's name is Dutton. Can you please rate our service? 0 to 5 stars out of 5. I'll give you 10 on 10 for neediness, as I keep my eye out for the drive. Your parcel's on its way. Check its progress, just click here. It has now left the depot. The diagram's quite clear. You can keep a tab on anything now, from a book to an ex-boyfriend. All the while, we wonder, where on earth will all this end? Brackets. Is it here yet? No. Can I have a beer yet? Not yet. Poof, make of that what you will.
Rubbish. Bloody rubbish.
And I said I'd got 2 bits of lyric. I have, right? Get a load of this. This feels more like a poem, really, than a lyric. But it's I can tell by the way I've written it that I think this is going to be a song. And what I will say right from the get-go here, listeners, is that I do enter these troughs of pain and disassociation and depression from time to time. And this was obviously written in response to one of these troughs. So get this. Feeling a bit miserable, turn off now. I feel spent, I feel empty, like a husk, like a shell. Not a good start. Not up in heaven, not even in hell. A flickering ember, a dim pilot light, where once inspiration burned ready and bright. Every idea is a turd in my drink, my brain like some dog meat, unable to think. Where are you, my muse? I so need you tonight. I've cast out my worm in need of a bite. Stare at the blank page, seems like a long age. Tear out what's inside you so others can know too. Awful. That's like the sort of chorus, I think. Rubbish. I sit with myself and I wonder what's there, under the teeth and the skin and the hair. Trillions of synapses snap into gear, only to find that nobody is here. I'm conscious of something, but it's not delight, or fear, or mad longing, or wisdom, or fight. It's the knowledge that maybe I'm not good enough. My inner voice shouting just like Brian Clough. Rubbish! Bloody rubbish! In fact, I've got... Can I do this? Can I do this at the same time? Because what I've got here is the fantastic cart wall. Shit, it works. Oh, this is completely changing everything. Oh, hang on, that's something else. Never, believe me, I've tried so hard to turn that off, but I've got no idea how to do it. Please, drink responsibly. There you go. Oh, that's exciting. I hope those turn up on the recording. If not, there'll just be big gaps. So anyway, you're useless, you're lazy, you can't do it at all. Everyone else will surely go to the ball. You're silly, you're pointless, you don't belong here. Try something easier for your career. Where the hell did that come from? A bit funny, are you all like this? You've got like reams and reams of shite you don't remember writing. It's madness. Truly madness. And we go now to the book of Genesis, right? me desperately trying to write down ideas again, just anything that's going to get me out of my torpor. And this, written here, Space, the Final Frontier, where we do a show or a podcast about space. What? It's like a mindfulness app, but with me in it. That sounds disastrous. TV or podcast idea. And I've written, instead of podcast, a P and a line and a T, because I think at this time I was really against podcasts. Thought every fucker's got a podcast. And now look at me, I've got two at least. Maybe three. And I go on here. People in general are A, fucking let down by these supposed to be in charge. B, worried about the planet. C, looking to do something, however small, to help. So, would a program about little acts of redevelopment and ecological repair do well? No, they wouldn't, Sean. It sounds fucking boring.
Sort of thing that Matt Baker might do a good job of, though. Ha! Matt Baker.
He's such a lovely fellow, though. I've got a feeling about him. I used to say as a joke that I imagined that he had bodies buried on his estate, but I really genuinely retract that. I don't believe that. Remember he said that funny thing about to David Cameron, didn't he, on The One Show, and he's been my hero ever since. On it goes. Don't laugh. Me and another person do dry stone walling or tree planting or guerrilla gardening. Fucking rubbish idea, this. I tell you what would be good, though. Guerrilla gardening. Gardening with gorillas, right? Not guerrilla gardening, which, of course, people, especially in non-rural areas, know is like going out at night and planting a few bulbs on a roundabout or something. I'm talking about getting actual silverback gorillas and being on an allotment with them. That I would watch. Anyway, I go on. Terrible ideas. Or is there an idea where I ask to be invited on walks or bike rides and chat to the people that invite me along? No, because Claire Balding's already doing that on Radio 4, Sean, you silly bastard. So, no, really, not good ideas at all, but what? The exploration of Dirty Blues lyrics continues. I thought we could do a Led Zeppelin special, actually. Unicooling, woman, I ain't fooling. I'm gonna send you back to schooling. Way down inside, woman, you need it. I'm gonna give you my love. I'm gonna give you my love. Oh, I want a whole lot of love. You know it. Do you know what it really means, though? Well, you've been cooling. You need a window open. I'm not messing about. I'm going to teach you about the sex. Way down inside, you need some sex. I'm gonna give you my penis. I'm gonna give you my penis. Oh, I'm gonna put my penis in you. 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 That's that. I don't know if that you'd ever really realise that. That was what the song was about before. It's 52 years old now. And two songs on from that on the same album is the Lemon song. Squeeze me, baby, till the juice runs down my leg. Oh, squeeze my lemon till the juice runs down my leg. The way you squeeze my lemon, I'm gonna fall right out of bed. Well, it's squeeze my penis till the juice, till the sperm runs down my leg. That's it. The way you squeeze my penis, I'm gonna fall right out of bed. So, again, the scale fall from the eyes. why Robert Plant or the blues man he ripped it off at the time collapsed out of bed on ejaculation is unclear. Maybe it's a small, maybe it's a single bed in which they are making love. You just don't know. That bit's not detailed in the lyric because, you know, they've only got four lines at a time. So that's good, isn't it? I think we've covered quite a lot today. I think that... Is that enough? I'll tell you what's a really great revelation. We can actually utilise the cart wall whilst we're actually recording these podcasts, which I think is revelatory and exciting. So I'll leave it at that for now. That's a good 16 or so minutes. I hope you enjoy the rest of today's creative cul-de-sac. It's time for us to introduce our next guest. Well, you tell me when we're ready and I'm just going to fucking launch at him.
Me?
Yeah.
Ready.
Okay. I've got an intro. And you remember I used to do intros on radio?
Oh, you're the Done radio guy.
I'm the radio guy. Remember that? You must remember that. Listen,
I knew your name rang a bell.
So it's Sean,
oh, it's you. Sean Keaveney.
That's it. Yeah, I remember you. Right, here we go. Our next guest isn't a guest.
Oh.
He's a friend. Okay. A bit much?
Yeah, no, that's...
Back it up a bit. Yeah. Sort of like a showbiz acquaintance, but edging towards friendship. He wouldn't make me his BAFTA plus one, but he might retweet something for me if I DM'd him. He won an Edinburgh Comedy Award in 2009. He's been nominated for a Perrier. He's written a series of superb books, short stories, poetry. He's a brilliant stand-up comedian, an actor of fine repute. He likes a pint. It's the quasi-legendary Tim Key.
Now, quasi, what is that?
Well, not quite.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, that's one way of looking at it, isn't it? I'm going to take my bins off as well because I want to be in the room with you. It's nice to be actually in a room with somebody.
Yeah, particularly a room like this with all those hard drives.
I know. It's a wonderful backdrop.
This is a serious room.
Oh, shit happens in this room, my friend. Let me tell you, there's a lot of posters as well.
Yeah, they're all of Joanna Lumley. I don't think I've ever been in a room with more than 40 hard drives and more than 3 Lumleys. You're doing very well for drives and Lumleys.
It is. You can't shake a stick without hitting a Lumley in here. You search Tim Key on Google, right? If you just put, I always find this an interesting insight into what people search for when they put a name in, and the questions that come up. Let's answer them.
Oh yeah, okay.
This is genuinely the first thing that comes up. What is Tim Key? That feels like a philosophical question, doesn't it?
Yeah, that shouldn't be something other people are worrying about. That should be something I'm stuck with. What is Tim Key? Well,
I see. What do you think that is in reference to the fact that you're amorphous talent-wise? You is he an actor? Is he a poet? Is he a comedian?
Is he
a sex symbol?
Oh, okay.
Is he all of these things? Do you think that's what it's wrapped up into?
Okay. Yeah. So the community are struggling to pin me down.
They want to pigeonhole you, and you won't be pigeonholed.
No, I will not. I'm fluttering out of one and into another constantly.
I like that.
You missed out message. Voiceover artist. I do Burger King.
Can you give us a bit of Burger King? Do you remember what the strap line is?
It's something like, come on, you know you want it, or something like that, or get it down, yeah. They give me a script when I go through to the booth. The last time they gave me a script, it was in print, it was in 48-point font, and it was two words. I can't remember what it was, but it's like, go on. Or something. They gave me the script.
Have it.
That's it, I think it's have it.
Yeah, yeah.
Have it.
There's something about your delivery that lends itself to that kind of... Here's a question for you from a voiceover perspective. Steeped in it myself and a veteran of some 20 years.
Oh, are you?
Oh.
But if you had to pick out one highlight?
Okay. T-Mobile. You got the actual shivers there. He's like, it's you who did that in 2005, 2009. Yes, it was me.
That's fantastic.
Or two.
You thought
that was Sean Bean. It's not.
Is it you?
No, it's not. It's Sean Bean.
Oh, is it?
It's just, I did do a bit of O2 before Sean Bean took the bread out of my fucking children's mouths. Not that I'm bothered, not that I'm bitter. But don't you find when you're in a situation like that, it's quite high pressure, that the fewer words there are on the script, the more difficult, ironically, it is to get them.
Oh, I see. Yeah, there is an element of that, yeah.
Because then you've got, you tend to have like 9 people in the booth. So anyway, we've got Lorraine, who's the brand manager. And then we've got Jeff, who's the studio manager. And then we've got the person from Saatchi's.
This is before we even discuss the creatives.
And then, there's like 4 creatives that are sitting there, and they've all, what they've done is they've written, go on, on a piece of paper often, haven't they?
Yeah. Someone said through the, they pressed their button and said to me, can you sound a bit more humiliated? And I was like, I don't think so.
Have you met me?
This is a real low point.
Can you sound a bit more humiliated? What are you, say something like you've cancelled my contract or something, and then I'll see if I can go any further lower than I am. The whole Stephen Toast, Matt Berry thing was that it doesn't get any more perfect than that, really, does it? So anyway, we've done that. We don't know what he is.
No.
Does Tim Key speak Russian?
Ну да, я говорю по-русски очень хорошо.
Where does Tim Key live?
Live in Kentish Town.
There you go. So, just out of interest, if you type in Sean Keaveney, it asks, what band was Sean Keaveney in? Influential post-punk band Mosque.
Mm. Mosque?
M-O-S-Q-U-E, like the Temple of Worship.
Oh, fantastic.
It's confusing... We still don't know why we named ourselves that. It was 1987.
Mm-hmm.
Is Sean Keaveney still married? That's a sex symbol question right there, isn't it?
Because that's very interesting.
A lot of horny people who see me or hear me and think, I would love a go on that.
Well, I thought that when I thought my where does Tim Key live was a bit of a sex symbol question.
Yeah, because they've got a one-man tent. They're going to stick it in your front garden till you come out. Yeah. And what is Sean Keaveney doing now? Fuck knows is the answer to that. But I tell you what I am doing. Sean Keaveney's creative cul-de-sac with Tim Key. So, I mean, I'll tell you what it's about, Tim.
Yeah.
It's essentially, it's like an expo of failed or dormant ideas.
Well, you've come to the right place.
Knew it. Yeah. We're not gonna ask Tom Basden onto this podcast because I think we've already established that whatever Tom writes down on a piece of paper, he makes happen somehow.
It's beautiful. Just add water. It's fantastic. That, yeah. Well, I mean,
he's just
when you're from the outside looking in. Mm. Oh yeah. Are you going to explain a bit of background on Basden?
One of your comic cohorts from many years ago, and you've collaborated with him many times in various different guises, and amongst many other things, you might have seen him as an actor on Afterlife with Ricky Gervais.
Yeah, who's another one who completes. He's a completer. Yes, you get him. There are people around who can complete. Are you writing down complete? What, for future podcasts?
Well, because you're right, there are two. I mean, essentially, when it comes to the creative process, we're already learning this by talking to different people about it. You're right, there are starters and there are completers, aren't there? Very often, never the twain shall meet.
Yeah.
Are you, like me, then, more of a starter?
Well, I mean, I don't know exactly how it works. I mean, I take these sorts of podcasts very seriously. So I spent yesterday afternoon, shuffling around the flat and seeing which kind of category I fit into.
I'm really excited. I really, honestly, some people, when we had Jim Moyer on, he totally understood the concept in the sense that he was actually thanking us for making him go through his notebooks because it's funny what you find.
I know. And actually, you can't, I mean, I could have spent days going through all this crap, but I think there comes a point where your main focus of your week can't be going on a podcast.
Again,
I put as much work into it as I could.
We're not at full humiliation yet. We're only at 28% humiliation at this point. But would you say that? Forgive me for reaching.
I will forgive anything for you.
I get the impression that I think we're kindred in some ways. Like I get the feeling that we both adore minutiae for a start.
Definitely, yeah.
And it feels like for me at least, I've mentioned this before, I definitely have ADD traits. So that's why I'm kind of good on the radio, because I can take a little minutia, a little gem of an idea, and flesh it out with the listeners for an hour or so, and then leave it behind and move to something else.
Yep.
So that's like a sort of starter, non-completer kind of approach to creativity.
Well, I think I've got a similar, the bedrock of my stuff is things where you're allowed to be quite a fragmentary. And that's why my live shows are all kind of this kind of disparate mess of poems and some talking, and then I used to read out recipes and things like that, and then little short films. And then it all sort of comes together. There's some alchemy, and it sort of happens and it works. And you would definitely watch, same with your radio show, you wouldn't think, well, your radio show doesn't make any sense. Yeah. You'd think it's all from the same mind. Yes. But just there's no kind of big thrusting narrative through it, but it does still feel like it's a completed thing.
Because you are the theme.
Mm-hmm.
Tim Key is the thematic, the thread that holds it all together, isn't it?
Yeah.
See, what is Tim Key? You're a thematic thread.
Well, I've never really... Yeah, I guess I am. Yeah, I'm a thematic thread. So what that means is I can just, you know, go to the pub for last orders with a notepad, write down a couple of poems and go home, and those poems will maybe find a home in a show or in a book or something like that.
There's a great freedom to that. And look at what I've written here.
Yeah. What is it? Oh, I can't. Do you want me to read it?
You read what I've just underlined out from my notes.
Pubs, do you get inspiration there? Do you sometimes sit in them with a pint and a pad, pretending to write? Yeah.
So I think we've hit the nail on the head with that one. Pubs are a great... I mean, actually, you've got a wonderful little podcast about pubs as well, haven't you? Speaking of things like that.
Yeah. There's a guy who... I didn't write it. He wrote it. And it's, lots of descriptions of pubs. I enjoy that podcast. That's quite fun. But yeah, I love going to the pub and writing. And I feel like that is the... There's a lot of pain in writing, isn't there?
Mm. Do you mean just the physical getting it out pain, or do you mean the emotional?
No, I mean getting up. I'm quite disciplined. Getting up quite early, and then somehow it's 11, and then it's 1, and you're like, oh, okay. Well, that hasn't worked yet, and then. The real crushing feeling of it's 5.
Yeah.
And then think, so I will like throw a whole day at the problem. I think there's really efficient writers, even amongst the people I know, who will just think, well, I'll write for 3 hours and then in the afternoon I'll go to the cinema.
Yeah.
Whereas my approach is much more, if I dedicate the whole day to this, I must end up doing 3 hours somehow.
Yeah.
And it's really stupid, you know, definition of madness stuff, repeating the same thing. It doesn't work. It's a really bad process. And during lockdown, I got quite good at getting up at really early, 6 in the morning, and getting 2 or 3 hours done before 11.
Okay.
And then it did fall off a cliff after that, but then I'd also write at 7 with a pint of beer as a sort of, coping mechanism with lockdown. I'd have a treat. I'd write poetry in the evenings. Oh God!
But it is. I think it falls between the two stools, though, really, because you've got. I do seem to see a lot of information from novelists, particularly, who say the best time to work is in the morning before the world's woken up. So I set my alarm for 5. I go down to the shed at the bottom of the garden, and
fantastic.
I write 3,000 words before midday.
It's brilliant.
Then I pick up my children from school and give them some lunch. And you know,
that's a fantastic thing that you've just done there. What was that, an impression?
I think so.
That's
brilliant. I don't
brilliant. Know of whom. I don't know exactly, but I get that person completely. And they jam it down your throat.
Yeah.
Obviously. And they're sometimes on desert island discs, aren't they? And they're boasting about their... They're not always Scottish, remember?
No, but usually, you know. I've got one eye on you, Ian Rankin. We love Ian. He took me... I owe Ian Rankin a pint, actually. And he knows that. But then there's flip that completely, and it's the more chaotic version, which is... And again, I always bring this up because it's all part of this podcast, the muse. and the visitation of the muse, and how elusive it is. If you're sometimes if you're trying to write, it just won't come. And so, you know, there are those stories like, you know, like Andrew Lou Goldham locking Jagger and Richards into a kitchen in Northwest London until they wrote the first songs.
Wow.
And it's funny how it can motivate you quite strongly if you can't get out of a fucking kitchen in Northwest London.
Yeah.
Because Andrew Lou Goldham's locked you in.
Yeah.
Unless you write a song.
Yeah.
It's sort of, but on the flip side of that, you know, somebody like Keith always says, you know, it's just like waiting for, you know, it's like being hit by lightning. You know, when it happens, it happens.
Well, yeah, my friend John Kearns, do you know him?
Yeah.
He's a fantastic comedian, and he talks about the genie visiting him.
it's the same thing, isn't it?
Yeah, the genie just sometimes perches on your shoulder, and when he's on your shoulder, you've got to write.
Ooh, I don't want him... It depends when he perches on your shoulder as well. You could be...
Anything could be happening. Well, what would be a worst case scenario?
Well, thinking, does it? I mean,
you've obviously got something in mind.
You could be curling one out, for instance. You know.
There's no harm in having a genie on your shoulder while you're doing that.
As long as you can.
You're not curling one out with your hands, are you? You're pushing it out. You're not pulling it out.
I mean, most people have got their phones on the toilet these days, so they can pop it in notes. Well, it's nice. I was going through
my notes today for you.
Well,
that's horrific. I mean, this is like, they weren't unfinished ideas. They're just stuff where I'm like, what the hell is that?
Come on, then.
Well, but they're not. But that's not part.
Let's start with iPhone notes because we don't always do that. And I think that's.
I did write it down. I looked for my name in the Olivier. You know when awards are like when awards are announced, the nominations, and you sort of, I don't know what was going on. I was sort of looking for my name there, but I wasn't in a play. I don't know what's going on. I'm such an optimist.
Did you think maybe a Lifetime Achievement Award or something like that? That's a sign of fucking madness right there, isn't it? That's like me checking to see if I'm in the BAFTAs list.
I know. I always check the BAFTAs.
It's me. You're about to hear an advert. Now, if you want to listen to the podcast ad-free and my Friday radio show... All you got to do is sign up to the Patreon if you fancy, not if you don't. But if you do, the link is in the episode notes.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Yeah.
I mean, this is not a substantial idea. Keith Kevin? I mean, that's not an idea, is it? Like, you know, like John Paul?
Are you thinking that Keith Kevin... I just think he might be in a poem or something.
Keith Kevin is a nice name.
Yeah. Keith Kevin,
but it's not gonna. It's, you can't go to a commissioner with it.
Well, you could take it to Netflix, couldn't you? But you'd have to do a really good meeting, I think.
I think this one must be a short. This one must be a children's story. This was from about 2016. I found this. It's about a boy with nail scissors, and what he gets up to with his nail scissors. So he's snipping people's laces, and he's like a mischievous boy, snipping plaits off, snipping rose heads off, arteries.
Oh, no. So he just walks past somebody, snips the artery, and it's just like squirting against the wall and he collapses.
Well, it says a book for 38 to 40 year olds. I mean, I don't I never wrote it. It's but a cul-de-sac, isn't it? This is why I'm on the show.
What a demographic that is. I'm trying to hit that 38 to 40 demographic. But you know what? In all seriousness, to back up for a minute, that feels like a really good, like you say, like a Harold, like a silent movie piece. Mm. It's a bit like, it reminds me of those old, are they short films like the Boy with the Balloon or The Man with the $1 million Note? Or I know that Rowan's doing one at the minute, Rowan Atkinson, isn't he? I think he's right. In production where it's just, and I just think, I'm very excited about it. It's just him house sitting for somebody.
Oh yeah, well, you know he's
with
involved,
hilarious consequences.
You know he's involved in that.
Who?
The Completer.
Gervais?
Basden.
Basden's involved in that?
Basden's in the
fuck
house.
For sake, we can't.
He's the completer. He completes things.
We need to get Basden on.
Pardon me?
There's no point getting Basden on because as we said off mic, he's got no notes. It's all been created. There's no fun there.
Okay, look, let me get Basden into this situation. Hmm. I found this note, which is a feature film, me and Basden, which we haven't written. Which is, I remember reading an article about, I think it's in Mexico, someone had dumped a fridge. So they'd, by the side of the road, they'd dumped the fridge down the hill.
Yeah.
Into this quarry.
Yeah.
And then the punishment served up by the judge in the court was to retrieve the fridge. So it's a film. It would be a film which is kind of a. Do you know Sisyphus, the chap who?
The Myth of Sisyphus. Yeah, who was it who wrote that? I've not finished it yet. Funnily enough,
he's the rock. He's the boulder guy.
He's the boulder guy. Yeah,
the boulder boy. So which is maybe going to be the title. So
was it whoever it was, Camus or whoever it was who fucking wrote that? Love the idea that he's wrote that in his notebook.
Boulder boy. Yeah. Well, I think that. Then we talked about, I think we were on holiday at the time, so we talked about, I think he gets his cousin or maybe his brother-in-law, because he can't do it on his own, and they're just down there with this fridge, and it's like a real moody old piece, and obviously there's bits where it gets two-thirds of the way up and it just goes and stuff like that, you know.
Is there a bit of Laurel and Hardy in there, like when they're moving the piano or something? There's a bit of physical comedy.
I think there's probably a third guy who comes in who's like, you know, your rope guy, ropey boy. who's like a Wolfman type figure from Pulp Fiction who tries to, you know, sort stuff out.
Is there a bit of Waiting for Godot in there? Or
I mean, it's a pretty, you know, it is one of those, you know, when you read those stories, I think I should... having looked at my notes, what would be more constructive is, you know those bits where it goes in brief and it's a tiny bit that's, you know, happened in Colombia or Riga or something, and you should just, I mean, it's just, it's a no-brainer. You should just be cutting them out all the time.
Yeah.
You should have a shoebox full of them. Because you have amazing stories where once 3 days goes by, no one remembers, no one's heard of it anymore. And so once 3 years have gone by, you just, you know, pass it off as your own, bish, bash, bosh. I mean, to be fair, Fridge Guy isn't going to, like, sue if he suddenly watches this kind of indie movie that's made on no budget.
Especially if he's fly-tipping in Mexico. I mean, he's not going to be
watching the BAFTAs. He's not to be trusted, that chap.
He's not going to be putting his name and BAFTA nominations into fucking Google, is he, that guy?
He must be checking the Oliviers, though. If anyone in their right mind checks whether they've won an Olivier.
I love... You've come up with two really good... I mean, that... going back to Scissors Boy, the idea that... A lovely silent movie, and this young, he maybe isn't even intentionally mischievous, but he's just playing with these scissors, and it's like the butterfly effect.
Mm.
He snips something, it looks innocuous, but it's attached to something that's attached to something that causes an absolute cataclysm or a train derailment. Actually, I'm making it sound sadder than it probably should be.
No, it can be as sad or as happy as we like. Now you're on board, you have every right to change it.
It's a yes from me, but I'm gonna need some script editing facility. But what grade did you get at Theatre Studies A level?
Got an A. I scored an A at Theatre Studies A level.
Of course you did.
Yeah, for my troubles,
bloody
for my
hell.
Sins, to go along with my A in history as well. Actually, while you're down there, I'm gonna write that down as well. What have you written?
You
A. You've written, literally written A.
I'm writing that down in history. I'm just updating. I've not told him, but I'm going to update his CV for him. That's how we pay. We haven't got any money, but I spend a couple of hours updating his CV.
This is purely for profile.
Mm.
So while we're talking about film ideas. Here's one for you, which I found. I found this one, actually, by last night I did a gig, and someone came to the gig, and the last time I saw her was at a read-through for a feature film starring your friend of mine, Gemma Arterton.
Oh, really?
No, I've no idea whether she is a completer or a cul-de-sacker.
I'm not sure.
But
she seems like a completer to me.
She's a completer. I mean, she's certainly intimidatingly beautiful.
Yeah.
And so I sat there and read, you know, in this film. And then the next day, this was about 2016, the next day I was walking to a theatre to do my first day of rehearsals for a play called Art.
Which we saw.
Rightly or wrongly.
It was amazing.
Thank you. And anyway, I'm just walking across the bridge. I think realistically I'm probably daydreaming about Gemma Arterton. But the point being, Gemma Arterton's coming the other way. Along the on Waterloo Bridge,
like you summoned her.
I know, and then so we have a you know, a quick stop and chat, and off we go. And then she's going to do her play in the Donmar Warehouse, and I'm doing my play in Waterloo. And so then I write like a short film, and the short film is that's the starting point, but it's a guy, an actor down there at the Old Vic. And a girl, an actress in... I'm taking me and Gemma Arterton out of the equation now. So he's at the Old Vic. She's at the Donmar. And he really likes her. And he thinks the only way that they could be together is that she would ever notice him is if she saw him perform in this thing. They sometimes bump into each other on the bridge in the day. And he says, I'd love you to come and watch. And she says, I can't... really, because I'm on at the same time. And then he says, have you not got an understudy? And she's like, what are you talking about? You don't get an understudy to go and watch someone else. And he goes, of course you don't. I know, of course you don't. Anyway, it ends with him going to his play and he wants to watch her. And it's her last night and he thinks this is the only way he'll get to see her. So he employs his understudy, gets his understudy out of the pub and runs across Waterloo Bridge, and then gets into the theatre, takes his seat, and there's a producer on stage who announces that Gemma Arterton won't be performing this evening because she's gone to watch him on his last night. But she won't see him; she'll see the understudy.
It's a bit like a Twilight Zone almost. That, you know, that sort of get what you wish for and then something terrible happens. It reminds me, there was a great episode of The Twilight Zone where it was about this guy who hated other people. We can all empathise with that.
Yeah.
And he was a voracious reader and he just wanted to sit at home and read. And his greatest wish, and he kept wishing for it every night, was that everybody would just disappear and leave him in like the British Library to read the works of the world. And then he wakes up into this reality.
What is this in?
This is a Twilight Zone.
Oh, is it really? Oh my God.
And he wakes up into this reality. The world is essentially empty. There's been some terrible nuclear fallout or something. But he's in this colossal library and he can't disguise his happiness. He's so excited.
Oh, he likes it.
He loves it. And he looks around at all these books and he thinks, where should I begin? He picks off, you know, the Myth of Sisyphus, I think it is. And this is the...
Boulder Boy.
I'll give that a go first. And then this is the end of the film or the story. You hear a crack and you look down and he stood on his reading glasses. What a story!
So he's
fucked, and he hasn't got any spares because he's not been to Specsavers.
That is beautiful.
Isn't it?
That's
reminds
fantastic.
Me a bit of your story.
Last night, I couldn't read my poem because the writing was too small, and I asked if anyone had any glasses, and someone threw some down on the stage, and they smashed. you must do live comedy. It's fantastic fun.
I'm never going back to it. When was the first time in your life that somebody made the Alan, is your brother called Alan joke, do you think?
Sometimes people have done that. I don't know when the first was. Okay. My great aunt, she used to have a crank caller who kept on asking for Don.
Oh my God.
Yeah. He did it a lot.
Ben, is he Ben went
Well,
there.
It's Ben's sense of humour, isn't it? You know, he's a young guy.
We've been sitting here half an hour. We finally hit pay dirt.
Oh, God.
That's
okay.
A classic. Come on, give us another one of your fucking ideas.
So these are... there's one called Zookeeper Peter. That was a... like a sort of Postman Pat thing with the same kind of cute animation, but yeah. Like about a kind of, you know, forlorn sort of zookeeper who feels trapped slightly.
He caged. Doesn't get mauled, does he?
No, he doesn't
point?
Get mauled, no, but he's, you know, classic stuff. He's you know, in love with one of the other zookeepers, and I think the animals talk to him or something. And
yeah, yeah.
I think probably we spent about 2 years trying to write that, but that's gone.
So did you actually try and flesh that out and create?
That was fleshed from an idea into a script, into another script, redrafting, and then dead.
Zookeeper Pete.
Zookeeper Peter.
Peter.
And then there's another one that I wrote with Mark Watson called Mooples, and that's like the Tweenies, you know, the Tweenies.
I remember the Tweenies.
So it's like a sitcom, you know, that starts with, you know, the end of, you know, and cut, and they take their heads off, and so they're sort of kind of, it's those guys just sort of kicking about.
Yes.
Yeah.
So hang on. So this is more of an adult theme.
Yeah.
This is what happens to the children's entertainer, you know, like the Teletubbies, when they take the.
Yeah.
That's interesting because.
It's interesting.
It didn't get anywhere.
Oh, didn't get anywhere, and probably was like, again, maybe about 18 months of working on it, I reckon.
It's such a shame because I think there's so much mileage in that.
Oh, I think it's a good idea. I mean, I think those things are quite fascinating. Have you seen the... there's a Twitter account called Mascots... What? Have you seen that? It's football mascots doing one-minute silences. And so there's just all these photos of just 22 men, and then on the end, like a... like a dinosaur. There was one the other day for Remembrance Day where he's a poppy. He's got his hands behind his back, and then I think when they say okay, they blow the whistle for the minute silence, I think he sort of leans forward.
What, this sort of form poppy, yeah. Trying to, yeah. Look respectful.
He'll get his body language respectful as he can, but in other news, he is dressed as a poppy.
And the 9-foot hot dog now will also be observing the 2-minute silence. It's now, fucking genius, that.
Now, my question is, whilst you're sort of going through your questions...
Yeah.
I mean, I did bring other stuff.
Bags coming out.
I mean, you know, I don't care.
Look at this.
I mean, this is like... This is just like, you know, a load of old crap. Like, that's like... That is, what is that? Oh, that's writing from before 2002.
What?
That's a radio show that didn't happen. That's a show about, a book about India. And that one is Things with Alex
Horn. This is such a rich seam. I do always say this to people. We don't have to get it all in today either, because we can always do parts 2 and 3 with somebody. So what was the radio, what was the book about India going to be?
The book about India is, I went to India with a friend of mine, Johnny Sweet, who's a brilliant completer. He gets stuff done. And we just travelled around India for a month. And while we were there, it wasn't like a working thing. We were just like, you know, on holiday, basically. But I do really enjoy writing poems. It's like a really fun way to relax, so... You know, we'd have a few sundowners and stuff, and when he was reading his book, I'd write some poems. And by the end of it, I had quite a lot of poems about India. And so when I got back, I did a show in Camden about India. I did called Indian Summer, and did maybe about 5 of these shows. And I don't think it was in the forefront of my mind, but it does sort of mean you can write off your flights to tax.
Can you give us a bit?
I mean, I don't know. Like, it's all pretty sort of... It does take me back a bit. An Indian fisherman caught 90 fish on one of his rowing trips. He hauled his schooner onto the beach and started strangling them to death. Restaurateurs came down and bought the corpses. Those who couldn't sell, he kissed. Those who couldn't sell, he kissed and returned to the ocean. The moon's twinkle bounced off the waves and illuminated his wellies and his turban. Don't know, really.
Isn't it gorgeous, though? Because that's like, in the absence of me being able to go to India, that's a pretty visceral picture you're painting there. I love the strangling of the corpses.
I think that's always stuck with me, that when I was... I don't think that's it is sort of my words, I suppose. But there's something that stuck with me once where, when I was studying Russian, we were reading something by Gogol, I think. And there's a bit where I remember my professor like pointing to the words in Russian and saying how the nuances between these words. I think it's like his father is dead, and he talks about the body, but then he talks about the corpse, and then he talks about like that each time he refers to it, it's less and less respectful yeah. and fine, and you don't really hear people talk about a fish's corpse. I don't know. Okay, I'll find one more.
You're still killing something.
I know.
Every 3 months, I think I'm going to be a vegan.
Oh, yeah. I'll do that. If you do it, I'll do it.
All right. Veganuary.
Gandhi spilt some pineapple juice down his sari at one of his protest marches. It was fresh on, and he blurted the words, "Mind where you're going, you clumsy cunt." Some of his apostles turned to him, surprised that he'd lost it. He tried to keep it together. "Cunt needs to watch where he's going," he reiterated. And then he put his peaceful face back on, clambered back onto his camel and rode serenely to the bit where the speeches were going to be, glancing at his cue cards from time to time as he rode. Don't know. I got it out of my system. It's sort of a cul-de-sac in a way, but like I was really... Yeah. It was like a sort of... I don't know. I don't think it was ever going to be like an Edinburgh show or a show that had any huge amount of future. But it was just like a fun thing where when we came back, you could just. It's like a show and tell.
Yeah, but that the Gandhi thing is, we're running on the same tracks a lot of the time because I always find I've got a similar sort of thought process, which is like one of my sort of recurring jokes stroke motifs is. You know, as my gran always used to say, ... You know what I mean? Right, so you right. might say, you know, as my gran always used to say, what a bunch of cunts.
Yeah.
You know, it's that same sort of idea, isn't it? Yeah. Somebody's serene and who you don't expect that of.
It's
saying,
really mad when you use that, when you put those words into, you know, revered people's yeah. mouths.
That cunt needs to watch where he's going.
I'm doing a poem at the moment where the Queen is really, you know, pretty colourful language. And it's almost like cheating because yeah. like the audience really enjoy it because it's like she would never say that. Gandhi would never say it.
It's like you've reminded me of this is one of the last things I put in my notes, which is like if I was ever doing a visual sketch program,
yeah,
has anybody done a sketch where it's the Elizabethan times, say,
yeah,
and there is an eminent. Portraitist.
Oh yeah.
Say it's Elizabeth the First, and the guy keeps, you know, keeps coming to the palace to do a painting of Elizabeth the First, and he over the course of a few weeks she sits for him, and then at the end there's this big reveal, and it's just a big spurty cock.
Oh yeah. Good.
Surely somebody's done that, you know.
Well, I was in a sketch show called Cowards, and we did one a little bit like that, where it's like a life drawing class. And Barristan, I mean, the completer, he stood there naked, and the three of us are painting. And then I think we leave because it's like we're having a pause, and Barristan just is stood there, and he comes around and has a look at them. And I think I've drawn a vase, Stefan's drawn a ship, and Lloyd's drawn like a cat running after a mouse.
So it's almost like we just like a naked man standing up there while we're drawing something else. Yeah,
I know.
That's so beautiful. Again, great minds. He's got his iPad.
I've got my iPad out because you have to remember when you spend like an afternoon, you're saving things as a PDF, and then and then emailing yourself. It's a pretty bleak thing to be walking away from the podcast without having opened it.
Didn't even fucking use that.
I know, and I don't really want to bring it out because conversation's flowing, isn't it?
But no, but I want to see. It is time for another idea.
Yeah, okay.
From the PDF, please.
Okay, so children's songs. So me and Alex Horn started writing children's songs to then send to the Horn section for the horn section to turn them into children's songs. So this is Ben Reynolds from the horn section, and this is a song where I wrote the lyrics, and then he turned it into this.
Jones, Jones, Jones. Jones coming round to play with me. Jones coming round to play. Jones is amazing. He wears dungarees. Jones is free like me. Billy, it's spaghetti in our little bibs. We'll hide in daddy's boxes. We'll hide in daddy's boxes. Jones! 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 Ooh. Jones!
He's got a funny accent.
Jones's
hair is red. I want to live on a boat with
Jones.
But we can't cause we are three.
And we'll eat spaghetti in our little bibs. And we'll hide in daddy's boxes. We'll hide in daddy's boxes. We'll hide in daddy's boxes. Daddy always brings home boxes.
It's an unbelievably creative musical piece, that.
I know. So this is another one which I haven't sent to him, called Naughty. I said a naughty word and so I had to go to bed. I said a naughty word and so I had to go to bed. I said a naughty word and so I had to go to bed. My name's Fred. Plums, bums, crumbs, thumbs. I shouted out a naughty and they sent me to my room. Blah, blah, blah.
I shouted out a naughty and they sent me to my room.
I shouted out a naughty and they sent me to my room. My name is Fred McComb. Plums, bums, crumbs, thumbs. I said a naughty word, they made me wash my mouth out with soap and water. I don't know how he's going to make that sort of scam. But you know, he could do that from his side. I said a naughty word, they made me wash my mouth out with soap and water. I said a naughty word, they made me wash my mouth out with soap and water because I said it to my daughter. Plums, bums, crumbs, thumbs. Please don't be naughty if you're little. Please don't be naughty at all. Just stick to saying lovely words like fairy tale and ladybirds and you'll grow up nice and tall. That's it.
Well, I think that unless I've misunderstood it, there's quite a dark twist in there when he says, because I said it to my daughter. So all the way through, I'm thinking, this is a three-year-old.
Yeah, I think that's really cheap stuff, isn't it? That's bad writing, I reckon.
I disagree.
That rug pull. I'm not proud of that.
I didn't see that coming.
No, but I like the stuff. I like the stuff before, and then when it says, "I said it's my daughter," you're like, "Oh right, okay, I get the idea. This guy's old."
To the best of my knowledge, you've not written a novel or a sitcom yet, have you?
My most recent books are, I don't imagine I'm going to get much closer to writing a novel than that. There's tons of words in there, and they're all sort of, you know, there's a story, and I look at that and think, what we were talking about earlier with the kind of fragmented,
yeah,
of a project, I kind of feel like that is about as close as I'd get. And I also feel like that'll be probably, if I write another book, that'll be the way that I'll write it, I think. It's like a mixture of poems and dialogues. Yeah. That's what these books are.
But the actual novel,
I mean, have you written one?
No, fucking hell. I mean, I can't get to the end of an email. I mean, but then I was just going to question my own question, because in this realm in which we all sort of exist, you know, the creative milieus, it's always that, isn't it? Film, if you're into comedy, sitcom, novel, it seems like those are the go-to sort of creative outlets.
Piece of work, yeah.
But I don't really, I've sort of had to teach myself that over the years. In fact, just to quickly make this about myself, when my radio show ended, it was only in the last couple of weeks before it actually ended that it finally clicked in my mind, because for all those years I've been getting extraordinarily talented people such as yourself onto the show and interviewing them, and I'd be kicking myself, why haven't I written an album or a novel?
Oh, that
or
must
a
be
film?
That must be the worst part of your job,
because you
I never thought of it that way.
There's this retinue of extraordinarily talented people.
Yeah, where
people.
You're suddenly just sort of sat there opposite Richard Iowadi.
Yeah. Well, what could be worse?
Yeah, you know, nothing.
As far as high achieving completers are concerned, he's in the top of the top of the pantheon,
gross.
Isn't he?
Yeah, yeah.
It's gross.
It really is. He's
bloody likable.
He's another sort of Stefan Golodziejewski, where he's just sort of, he just gets on with it and makes something. He'll go quiet for a little bit, and then suddenly there'll be a film, and you're like, oh, yeah, you're doing it sort of slightly better than I'm doing it.
I suppose you should bring it to a slow close, because I don't want this to become a hostage situation, as I always say. But could you reach into your reservoir of unresolved ideas for just another sort of twinkling nugget?
Oh, right, yeah. Well, let me just have a look here. I think this is a book that I don't even... I mean, this is a book, but I mean, it's not finished. I haven't read this since I wrote it, but this is a poem, and then underneath there's a footnote. Amal wrote a letter to his sweetheart on a seed. He injected the seed into an apple. He gave her the apple and went to war. A tree grew, and on each leaf there appeared a word from his letter. One day, Grace stood at the right angle, and the words formed into the letter again. She lowered her shades and read Amal's letter through tears. She penned a reply on a plumstone and buried it in a watermelon. "Give this fruit to Amal," she said to Sydney. He placed it in his parachute bag, and he solemnly boarded his flight to the Sudan. Well, I don't know. And then the footnote is, "I wrote a letter to a girl once. She stole my heart. And cavernous and plastered on sherry, I retreated to my balcony with my pen and a family packet of jumbo cashews. I can't remember exactly what I wrote in the letter, and I never gave it to Chapman, because I think the whole premise of it began to make less sense, and the more I found out about how close she was to Keith. But I continued to carry the envelope with me for months, and if I ever bumped into her, I would reach into my top pocket and draw it out enough that she could just about see her name and the sinful smudges of sherry and tears that besmirched the seal. At these moments, she would always fix me one of her stares and say, 'If you're not going to give me the letter, I really can't think why you've bothered to sit down and write it.' I'd always walk away from these meetings, shaking my head and smiling and thinking, 'Yeah, Chapman's wise beyond her years. I'll give her that.' Once I stopped in my tracks and considered going back, bursting back into the theatre bar and slapping the envelope against her chest. But of course, I didn't have the guts for that type of move. Instead, I'd always wipe my eyes with my sleeve, click my heels together and hasten away from the physical incarnation of Chapman." I don't know.
I
literally haven't read that since I wrote it, and I don't know what I don't quite know what it fits into, but it was in a file in my computer called Love. So probably a book about love.
There's so much unrequited, there's so much I love little things about these poems, like the reference to the jumbo bag of cashews for some reason stands out.
Mm.
And the fact that you refer to your romantic quarry as Chapman as well.
Yeah, I like that. When a name came up.
Chapman. Like that.
I honestly think Chapman, thinking about it, was me and Alex Horn once did a pilot for a TV show. It doesn't even sound right. Somewhere in Wapping. This would have been 10 years ago. And it was shot in the same place. I think the TV channel, you might know this channel, that it was called, it just was a number, like 481 or something. And I think it was like quite a kind of like, maybe sort of loaded generation thing, because I think they set us up with, I think we had like a butler who was a girl who was like, you know, some kind of, you
like
know,
a sort of a glamour model.
Yeah, like eye
woman.
Candy. And I think she was called Chapman. I think,
God.
Or maybe Alex started calling her Chapman because
he... Your embarrassment. That's absolutely...
Oh, I don't know.
We've all got dark chapters.
And then that's this is a diary when I was writing art, and it says November the 7th. I left for work early this morning. I've made the decision to walk to work every day in order to obliterate some weight from my flanks and make my face more gaunt and expressive by the time of curtain up. And this is that's a page of it. Then the next page is the dates, but with no entry. And it's just the people have come and watched the show. Cul-de-sac.
It's incredible, isn't it? I often think with somebody like you, especially not Basden,
there'll
be nothing left when you know when he eventually passes in 50 or 60 years' time. there'd be nothing of interest. It's already been published or made. But with somebody like you, it'd be very interesting. It's like Samuel Pepys' diaries or something.
Yeah.
Imagine the wealth of stuff that there is there. The non sequiturs, bizarreness.
It's interesting, isn't it? I mean, like, these are my books, and they're kind of, they're a mixture of poems and stuff like that. Because when I was going through my, you know, old files in my Word documents and all of that, I found one called Wrong Howard. The Wrong Howard. And then I opened the file and it just said notebook 64. So I must have made a note to, I couldn't be bothered to like write it all up because no, this isn't happening. I'm not going to write it. But I thought maybe in some point, maybe I must have thought I'd go on a podcast at some point where I'll need to know what the Wrong Howard is. Anyway, the Wrong Howard is, I guess this would be a feature film. I organised my brother's stag weekend about 20 years ago. And he just sent me all of the emails. And he said, if you want any help, then ask, you know, one of my pals to be your wingman. So I asked Richie Holden to do it. And then we sent out all the emails and stuff like that. And we went to the Lake District. And we met in Victoria near where my brother worked. And I bought him a little pink chair with like a heart-shaped seat on it that he'd carry around the mountains and sit down on in pubs and things. And we're all in there and it's very convivial, about 16 of us. And then my brother comes up to me and just takes me to one side at the bar and just says, it's the Wrong Howard. And he sent me an email.
So the guy who you'd chosen as your wingman?
He hadn't made, actually, he's not important in the story at all. No, this is just that I'd got my brother had sent one email was the wrong email. And the Howard that he wanted was never contacted about the stag. And there's a guy who, and I remembered when he told me this, I thought, that's quite funny because like this Howard, he was the first to reply to almost every email.
So he must have thought, I'm on the periphery of this friendship group.
He was close enough, you know?
The wrong Howard.
If I invite the wrong Sean, like if I'm inviting the wrong Sean, legitimately could look at the email and go, well, that's interesting. Yeah, I'm in.
Don't get out much. I got the opening of an envelope. The wrong, because for a while there I was thinking that you were saying the Ron Howard, and I was expecting that part of the story to be your brother taking you to one side in this Lakeland pub and saying Ron Howard's over there, the guy from Happy Days.
No.
But the Wrong Howard is an so were you thinking that there's a film idea here?
Well, I just don't know, because it said go and have a look at this one at you know page 64, but like, you know, I don't know quite how it, I mean, there's not much stuff in here that sort of adds anything to that. I mean, I guess it's just, I guess it needs fleshing out. I think it hit a cul-de-sac.
Just to bring it round at the end to the you know, the perfect denouement. You're right, though. I mean, it's at least a short film, isn't it?
Feels like it, or maybe it's just an anecdote for podcasts.
It's the Wrong Howard.
I could maybe do it on other podcasts.
I think you should start touting this one about. This does a lot of heavy lifting for you, the Wrong Howard story. It really does. But I can see, I'm trying to work with this idea that maybe all the way through this short film, this Howard guy seems like the life and soul of the party, and the one who all the attention centered around, as though he's like one of the major guys in your brother's life, and that's the end of the short film is him taking you to one side and going, it's the wrong fucking Howard. I barely know the fucker.
Yeah, he was very nice, by the way.
Was it?
Yeah, Howard.
Did that cement their relationship a little bit more? You know.
Well, I mean, obviously the elephant in the room was that he was the only person there who wasn't invited to the wedding.
Fuck.
I think in the film, I've got a page here in my notes where I think the right Howard arrives, because so that's a bit more, that ramps it up, doesn't it? Because if my brother is saying, well, you need to get the right Howard here, and if on the second night the right Howard arrives, then the wrong Howard starts to think, why has this second Howard come? Was I meant to be here?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the problem is that this is becoming a trope on this podcast, but there's so much to go at. I mean, sometimes people, maybe they don't have that much of a sort of back catalogue of unformed ideas. Basden, for instance, but you, this is obviously just a snapshot what you've brought in this bag. So there probably are going to have to be multi parts to this. This can only be part one.
Oh yeah, that's a good idea.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, we could do you know, what's it called? The comedy cul-de-sac.
It's Sean Keamy's creative cul-de-sac. Yeah.
The creative cul-de-sac notebook session.
Yeah.
Because I've got all these notebooks. This was the first one. It was bought for me by Victoria Lloyd, who produced Cowards on the radio. And
it's beautiful.
It's such a nice book. And I sort of filled it up and then kind of sort of took it from there, bought the next one, and I've now got, like, I think I've got about 80 of these.
Jesus, that puts me to shame. So we do, don't we? We're going to have to put another date in the diary. I get the feeling that Tim needs this catharsis as much as we do.
No, not quite as much as you do.
There we have it, a conversation with Tim Key about creativity. I remember doing it, but such is my condition, memory, mild to moderate ADD. I can't really remember the content, but I just remember it being very funny. It would probably sound weird you hearing me say this, because you'll be like, literally, it's just been on. But thank you so much to Tim for doing that for us. It was really a great pleasure and a privilege. But we left quite a lot in, because there was a lot of good stuff. So this week alone, we're not going to do your ideas for the cul-de-sac. We'll be back to that next week. If you've got any, please send them in, seanscreativecul-de-sac@gmail.com. And we'll put them in next week's program of events. But you've got to go and see Tim Key live if you've got the chance. He's so good live. If you've never done it, you've got to do it. It should put it on your bucket list. Okay. And he's doing his show Mulberry at the Soho Theatre London.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
London till the 2nd of April. It's all a bit London-centric, I've got to say. And then he's doing it at the Pleasance in London, 11th of April to the 22nd of April. I'm sure he'll be going around the country soon. Copies of his book, Here We Go Around the Mulberry Bush, are available, and he's also in Witchfinder, which, if you haven't watched, is fucking brilliant as well. Thank you, Tim Key. Thank you. See you next week.